Thanks, Katja. It's a real treat to be here, a really real treat to read with Warren, too. I've been anxiously awaiting this book for a long time, and it's nice to be able to finally read it and to hear him read from it, as I'm sure you'll agree. Earworm is it's a song or piece of a song that you can't get out of your head. It's a loan translation from the German Ohrwurm, because, you know, the Germans often have wonderful words for everything that we can't quite name there. I'm going to read 7 poems, the first 2 in the book, and bounce around the last section a little bit. This one's called House by the Railroad. It's after the painting by Edward Hopper, fairly self-explanatory title. The awning looks like a piano, my companion said. No, wait. The awning looks like a roll-top desk. And so I took up his unused instrument. Then the tracks across the foreground began to resemble the player's bench, and the lack of anything resembling a musician lent an ennui to the pale blue paint, which was the same blue as the sky. Perspective meant seeing the house from only one side of the tracks. I imagined myself walking toward it, I said, but from another painting, armed with provisions, milk, toothpaste, and the like. I'm going to live there for a time. I'm going there too, my companion said, but as the mysterious one with a dark, unspoken history. What kind of person rents a room in a mansion that is so close to those tracks? I didn't answer. I was on my way upstairs to claim the garret room with the big windows, the quietest spot in the house, I thought, the room with the most sunlight. At night, I could hear my companion downstairs at his roll-top desk, revising documents, memoirs, notes to the people he'd left. I couldn't say for sure. I knew so little of this man. The train whistle would blow around 3 a.m., traveling a distance between 2 unknown points outside of the frame, like a hand absent-mindedly brushing keys on the way to somewhere else, I thought. Then envy for his roll-top desk, his second guess, and the care he took to get it right. This next one is called To Lean Into the Hands of the Second Person Pronoun is Also a Kind of Love. You have not walked the Great Wall of China or seen hieroglyphs on cave walls illumined by the lamp on a hard hat, though you have moved into purple attic rooms and painted them over. Squirrels found their way into the walls one fall. They're scratching, expanding your idea of the wall, the way Borges expands your idea of the library, which contains the entire universe. Oh, wrecking ball, the eye that sees straight into the fragile nature of these walls. You have friends who build walls around themselves, others who live so exposed that you fear for their safety. A neighbor's alms would reverberate through the walls every night at 11 o'clock, and you felt peace by proximity. Despite screaming through walls and crying through walls, despite waking in the middle of the night to an ecstatic shriek so fierce you sprang into action, believing someone in serious danger on the other side of the wall. Shooting guard Ray Allen once scored 51 points on a big screen television, and you cheered till they closed the pub down and the screen went concrete gray. Then a cigarette outside against a wall with a man who tells you his daughter was murdered by dealers for a debt he could not pay. These are the walls that shelter your family. These are the walls that shelter your hamster. The thin bars through which you admire her are as rigid as stanzas of Rilke's Der Panther. Animals enclosed in artificial space often bunch into the corners. The Wall is an album by Pink Floyd, which you're proud to be able to finally admit is terrible now that you are not stoned in your friend's basement at age 14, trying your best to create an aura of coolness by agreeing with everything they say is wicked until you have built a whole wall of what's wicked, made of things you can't remember now or just won't bother to list. Barriers to the future, to the points up ahead you must constantly hurdle, as if motion itself keeps the hurdles unthreatening, hurdles themselves a kind of prepubescent wall. If you carve carpe diem into a park bench, someone will dig in until it reads carp per diem. If you hang a painting, someone might say the angle looks all wrong. A firing squad leaves trickles of blood on the bricks, just as grandmother paints a hummingbird at the bottom of the stairs. The stony nubs of ancient cities, Troy for instance, rise out of the ground, the jawbones of epochs. They talk to us, or rather to the archaeologists who translate for us, and we are seldom surprised to find the words they say are cruel. If you take your date by surprise outside the restaurant, press her up against the wall and kiss her hard, it is only the prelude to a mattress, which is a softer, more forgiving wall, of the kind we also provide for children or the criminally insane. Valencia, Spain, 1933, is a wicked shot by a photographer, Henri Cartier-Bresson, of a boy with his eyes rolled back who touches his hand to a wall. You sat many hours wondering what he is thinking, the wall itself worn by weather and time, the paint peeled, so much texture it looks less like a wall than a nameless city at night as viewed from a boat in its harbor. And though the fact of the wall remains, he touches that fact. A hand on your lips that says, hush, I think we are nearly there. This next one is written after a conceptual sculpture by a guy named Dennis Oppenheim. And it's two busts facing each other, and they're both wearing Hawaiian shirts. And all of the, kind of florid figures on the shirt are growing out of the shirt. And they're like plastic figures, and then they're sort of coming off the shirt, and they're charging at each other. And it's called Murder in Hawaiian Shirts. I got rid of one of the shirts, and then so this poem is we're set on a ship that's on the shirt that's kind of growing off it, and it's just called Murder in Hawaiian Shirt. A beach bucket kicked over, hanging upside down on the right sleeve like a bell. Storybook sea monsters, giant crabs and cavernous shells. Frogs the size of hammerhead sharks, a palm tree floating past our hull, an outstretched hand, everything quivering. How many days had I napped on deck through my dog watch, killed an afternoon over games of gin rummy? Now Poseidon was dancing. We had to get down to the galley. Not even our captain could predict how long we'd be in the ox eye of the storm. Our ship might have been pollen emitted from the lips of an orchid, or the olive sloshing back and forth in a dry martini, sweat hung on in the air like an amoebic cloud, toxic as dark thought. Oh, had we boarded a breaker in the Arctic, something slow and deliberate through silk-smooth plains of ice. Now the power had been cut, and we were feeling around the unlit SS Aloha for the shoulders of friends, for the last of the fruit cocktail tins, for the hunting knives hitched to our bootstraps. I've tried many times unsuccessfully to quit smoking, and I wrote this poem during a day where I was trying to do that. And it's called Reflective Neon Vest. Monuments covered in snow, and bus stops covered in snow, and snow out the window. I'm trying to quit smoking. I'm listening to the headphones. There are people in reflective neon vests in the snow. They are carrying shovels. I would pick this kind of day to start a self-portrait. I am married. I am 30. Remember having to get out of my own way and thinking God was the space left. Then the space was a postcard on a bulletin board from a woman writing poems in a castle in Scotland, and she didn't even know me then. Then a husband in a story by James Salter. Not even in the story anymore. The smoke got into the bones, said his widow. She was sexy. He was dead. He had my name. I love my wife. I love the snow. It's like a crowd speaking over top of my story. I dress for the weather. I don't try to dig myself out from the snowy grave every morning. I say mean little things, little burns sometimes to my wife. Then the space, I am 30, giddy, perversely happy, reflective neon. Hey. This next one is sort of keeping with a nautical theme. Well, there's no nautical theme, but two poems ago, if you remember. And it's a pantoum, and it takes its lines from the Globe and Mail watch video online component, the headlines underneath there from about a week or two period in Christmas around 2009. And it's called Coast Guard Vessel Pleasure Boat. Bear, lion, and tiger make unlikely brothers. Macy's fire smokes shoppers out. Boy stuck with needles in month-long ritual. Fatal collision of Coast Guard vessel, pleasure boat. Macy's fire smokes shoppers out. Prince William homeless for a night. Fatal collision of Coast Guard vessel, unlikely brothers. Karaoke assault suspects kicked out of court. Prince William homeless for a night. Conjoined twins celebrate third birthday apart. Karaoke assault suspects kicked out of court. Detective pulls gun during a snowball fight. Conjoined twins celebrate third birthday apart. Beluga gives birth for the second time in a week. Detective pulls gun during a snowball fight. Police catch infamous Christmas tree thief. Beluga gives birth for the second time in a week. Boy stuck with needles in month-long ritual. Police catch infamous Christmas tree thief. Bear, lion, and tiger make pleasure boat. This next one is called Money and Beauty Sitting in a Tree, and it's in the voice of Money. I have bureaus set up in the city she frequents, wired the chinchilla coat I gave as a gift when she turned 605. I get reports from my staff of her goings-on, the wing burst of kestrels in Prague, the new neon signs in Milwaukee. I have an accordion file full of the moments the world has caught fire in her presence. I must look like a drunken polka musician late at night in my office. It's hard on our kids. I've given up on overseeing the design of my series of homes in the shapes of chandeliers to hang under big city causeways and bridges. I prefer using the payphone to using my cell. A staffer says the smell of cinnamon is hovering in the air in Dakar. A staffer says they spotted her slow dancing with the butcher in Montreal, the customers clapping, stomping and smiling. She comes home twice a year. There's a marble sink built into our foyer. I tell her how gorgeous she looks. She lets me wash both of her hands. I think I probably have time for two more short ones here, so I'll abandon the set list too. Two more. This is called Thought Bubbles Hovering Over the Canadian Taxidermists Association's Annual General Meeting. Does the killdeer's headache when a winter storm lashes the side of the house? These sandwiches are the white sails sent out by bread ovens that have buoyed up my body since birth. My pastor, oh pastor, how are we going to save this child? Best is a line drive into the right field corner. Best is a slow morning between Genevieve's legs at her chest. The bow falls as still as a water glass, a cloud in the act of changing from one likeness to the next. And then the last one I'll read tonight is the title poem from the book, Earworm. So there's likely a more accurate name for the glow of a deer's eyes in the dark, for the hunger that drew a python in Florida to swallow an alligator whole, for the aura, the swell just before the gut burst, for why you've been staying up late at night on a search engine looking for all of the possible names for a lump at the back of your nostril, for the name of that girl who sold you a pill from the basket of her bike and rode off while her fairy wings flapped in the breeze, and a name for that breeze. Repetune, Orverm, the last song stuck in your head, which became something else. And for what else? For not being able to say the one thing that might have kept you from continually falling apart. For discovering late. For replaying the video clip of Jolton Joe Carter's ninth inning blast in the 93 series. For the sound when the ball hit the bat and everyone knew they'd won before it left the park. And for the white noise that isn't white noise, but a poor translation of what the blood tries to say, and what the blood tries to say. For the feeling of never wanting to leave the party and then having to leave. For the ache in your legs when you should have cabbed home, but decided to walk, and the walk was too far, but you had to keep on. Earworm, little one, chugging along, traveling towards a name. Thanks very much.